But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The worldwide web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome to The Advice Show. I'm your host, Newmont Advisor Editor Jack Gilbert. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Rob and Scott from Finova Money. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So guys, it's been, I think I did an interview with you 3 years ago when you were just launching the firm. You'd all previously left your previous roles. Can we talk about where you are today, how things have gone in the last 3 years, where the business is at today?
Let's do it.
Yeah, for sure.
Kick off.
Yeah, 3 years just gone super quick. We actually take quite a lot of time to reflect on it sometimes, probably not as enough as we should, but yeah, a lot's changed. We're now a team of eight. We've moved into a permanent office. We grown a number of clients we're working with. Probably can delve into all of that sort of stuff anyway, but yeah, we're making good progress. Client numbers, we're looking after 187 clients now, which is good. Onboarding about 40 more families at the moment, so that's a lot of work.
Yeah,
positive, helping more people. So yeah.
And assets under advice,
just over 80 now, approaching the 100. That's the key mark.
end of the year.
But yeah, it's more about refining how we're delivering advice. We're constantly trying to improve how we're doing. Because of the way we charge, the assets sort of are important, but they're not the mainstay of what we do. So yeah, just constantly trying to refine how we're working and improving what we're doing for clients.
Yeah. And so on that point, obviously you guys are at a fixed fee model. You've been quite kind of open about talking about the why you've gone down that route and the kind of value you see in that. Can you talk about the business, like what the advice proposition looks like, what kind of clients you're targeting, and obviously, yeah, what the fees look like?
You could say that as soon as you just updated the advice problem. So the whole point of the fixed fee is it reflects the work we're doing for a client,
yeah.
The complexity, how much time we're going to be spending with them and for them when they're not with us. And that's how we've tried to align it. So the more time, energy and effort we're spending, the higher the fee might be. The less we're spending, the lower it will be. So you kind of get a bit of a range for the clients with similar amount of assets, where more time, more energy, more effort goes in, slightly higher fee, less, slightly less. And we've designed it like that to be as fair as we can. It's had its sticking points. I think we can all acknowledge that, where it does bring that fee conversation far more into the light, where it's been a bit of a learning curve on how you actually discuss that, because it can come from the best intention, but when you're actually talking about the pounds and pence, that can sound far more real to a client than just 0.8%, just 1%. So you start to have those proper conversations and explain your value. And it makes us better advisors because we're talking about it, but it also does, as I said, highlight it. So
yeah, and I think as well, we have a mix of clients who pay, some still pay via assets and some pay directly. And definitely the conversation with those who pay directly, right? They feel it slightly more.
So directly, you know, this is an invoice, like a bank transfer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, standing order style. Yeah, direct debit.
Yeah.
And the clients that pay it directly, I mean, there's lots of stats, right? We were talking about this the other day. People who pay directly themselves feel they want to pay 25% less than somebody who basically pays via assets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There isn't a ton of data actually on it, because so many people still pay via a percentage model that you can't sort of like coherently say whether what works and what doesn't work and what the edge says, but that's what some of the data was showing.
Well, I mean, I always find this when I don't have an advisor, I have a workplace pension, and I always forget about how much it's deducting from my pension each month in fees and things like that, but because you just don't see it, you know, particularly with investment returns and et cetera.
Yeah.
I mean, have you had any clients kind of push back against the model and say, you know, we'd rather do a percentage or we'd...
I think we had a bit of a pivot at the start. Mm. So we'd come from a world where we were ad valorem percentage based, and then we had this idea that we wanted to create something that was different and do it the way we wanted to do it. So we kind of fell into this world initially of, well, let's do a bit of both, like a hybrid. So we had a fixed fee for the financial planning and then a smaller percentage based fee for the assets we're managing.
And what we found after onboarding a handful of clients on that model was that you're kind of naturally very good at explaining the benefits and the pros of the fixed fee. And then it kind of felt like, oh, and by the way, there's this small percentage-based fee over here. And we had a bit of feedback from some clients that were like, I don't really understand the two. It feels like you're almost double dipping, double charging. So it was quite clear to start with that you can't have, maybe other firms can do it. We just found it didn't work. So we very quickly then pivoted away, got rid of the ad valorem fee altogether and just went fully subscription-based.
Yeah, I think very few firms do hybrids. Most either do one or the other, don't they?
Yeah. I think the feedback from the clients was the most important thing. It was like, we don't really understand. You're great explaining the benefits of this and then you're still doing that. Yeah, it's kind of like like a double dipping sort of thing.
And then if you look at the advice proposition, so you guys are targeting more kind of young professionals, like accumulation phase, is that correct? Or is it kind of a mix of post?
It's actually changed. Yeah, it's changed quite largely. We're currently looking at this as part of our proposition. Actually, the clients, as with most people, fall into business owners from a varying degree age-wise, professionals, and then those approaching retirement or are retired. We've just made the conscious decision that actually we're not going to niche. Niching's probably become a big topic in our space.
Well, it's become increasingly kind of popular. It's not become a niche, has it? More and more financial planners.
Yeah, and we've just sort of wanted to go against it. So we like working with lots of different types of people. And to be fair to us, probably the three of us all, if you looked at the clients that we work with individually, they probably do fall more into one category. We don't really have an equal spread necessarily between each of us individually. So the business is well equipped to deal with any type of client, but we've probably seen in the future that we'll have specialists within the team.
Yeah, because I guess with niche model, it's that's been seen as such a good marketing kind of ploy in terms of for advisors starting out or new firms having a niche, lawyers or accountants, whatever it is, and then that generating a client bank. I mean, how have you been able to generate clients without a niche, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's being well equipped to deal with everyone at any stage of life and any kind of background, or whether it's a limited company business owner or someone in retirement. I mean, we spoke about this being like a subscription-based firm, tech-enabled at the start. We're going to deal with young clients. And the first clients we took on, I think, were mid-80s in Bristol who wanted stuff in the post and only met in person. Oh, my God, that's like a four-hour drive for me to go and see them. And they're still clients and they're great and we deal with the kids and stuff now. But so, yeah, I think just having the ability to deal with everyone helped. In terms of the marketing side of it and where clients are coming from, still the main way that we're attracting clients is referrals, either from existing clients or professional introducers. They're still the two that are the biggest source of prospective clients that we engage with.
Yeah, we want to, again, one thing when you start and you have all the time, you have all these ideas of what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. And when you quickly realize, as soon as you start taking clients on and you're really into the day-to-day weeds of the work, you're sort of like, well, actually, we need to focus on where actually it's going to work and not. And we want to do a lot more on the digital marketing side. Obviously, AI is becoming a big thing around how to market and things like that. And we now have the capacity with the growing of the team to be able to maybe look at some of this stuff. We obviously produce a lot of content.
You're quite active on LinkedIn.
Yeah, and we do now. I've started to see the rewards of some of that. We have some people coming directly via that. They're like silent watchers. Yeah. They don't really engage. And then all of a sudden they say, oh, we've looked at what you guys have been doing for the last couple of years.
Interesting.
And now it's time.
So it's taking the time, progression of doing things regularly.
Yeah, proof of concept, I guess, trust building up.
Dan Priestley says it's 11 touch points
before
someone actually knows who you are, what you do, what you stand for. Mm. So it takes a long time for them to have that 11 points. And if they don't see you for a while, that also starts to fall away.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point.
But I was going to say, there's one more thing. I think in relation to the niching, I'd say we'd probably lean more into actually the financial planning aspects of it. And that's what we hang our hat on. It's being able to help those clients to really get to grips with where they are, what they want to do, and hold them kind of the accountability aspect so that they're working towards that. What sits underneath that, where some advisors might niche, we just do with this topic or that type of client, it almost gets lost in that grey zone between it. But by focusing on the planning itself and delivering that to the highest degree we can, it really does support clients being happy with what we're doing for them.
Yeah.
And then they're willing to say their friends, family, colleagues, have a chat.
And I guess it doesn't matter if you're like a lawyer or a dentist or whatever, young professional, financial planning is all kind of the same in terms of what it's trying to do, right?
Yeah, everyone's plan.
And it, you might tweak it in a different way for a different person.
Yeah.
But because we have quite a wide range of clients doing loads of different things, we're quite well equipped to actually go through that process with them.
Yeah. And then we can talk about AI in a second, Scott, because obviously it's such a big theme. Yeah. But I wanted to ask, obviously 3 years into this, what's been the biggest mistake you've made, or what's been the thing you wish you hadn't have done along the way? Not charging fixed fees.
It's all learning.
It's all learning. Yeah,
it's all learning.
It's all learning. I wish we. I think maybe one of the things is like a business owner lens on it is I wish we'd maybe hired sooner.
So you've just hired two graduates.
Yeah, two grads have come through.
And a practice manager.
Yeah, head of ops Anna, who's great, and we've got two admin as well. I think taking people on took us a while. Probably took 2 years for us to actually. We've taken on a lot of headcount over the last 12 months, and I think it's that fear of, as anybody who's gone through this process of running, setting up a business in this space, and then trying it, it's like you, this like fear of like not having enough, and then you want to get to a point. Okay, what happens with the business when you take people on, the considerations you have to have, and actually we.
Well, it's a risk, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. And we probably should have just taken people on sooner and then gradually built up rather than having this.
wave
of every come through. So that would probably be my only thing. I think sometimes as a business owner, you probably sit on stuff too long out of fear of making the wrong decision, when actually slow decisions are probably worse.
And it's also a slow burn. It's like you go into a cold pot and it starts to boil slowly.
Well, people don't hit the ground running right within the first 6 months. You can't expect them to. They're new to the profession, or they've come from a different way of working, and you can't, they just start and then they're straight away doing everything. It takes time and you have to invest in it, which is exactly what we wanted to do. I just wish we'd done it slightly sooner.
Yeah. The only other thing I'd add to that is in that bit in those first couple of years, probably before we hired people, was the three of us not being together as often as we are now.
Because you weren't based in an office, you're working from home.
Yeah, we didn't have a permanent space. And when we did get together, it wasn't that frequent. It wasn't like we had a set date that we're in all the time. Like now we get together every single week in person, and there's more structure to it. It wasn't at the start, and then you kind of just get into your little silo and you just get stuck into the work
you're
doing.
Catch up at the start of the week, and then you might not speak until the next Monday because everyone's just doing their thing.
Yeah. Mm. I think as founders now, you've got a team and there's more to worry and think about. Like that structure and having those dedicated times is really important.
Yeah. And what's the office like? I mean, are you guys expecting your staff to be there? How often? What's going on in there?
We mandate 3 days a week. But how they carve that 3 days up doesn't matter. And then we just have core hours in the middle of the day. We want to offer as much flexibility as possible. I think, again, one of the things we found with the two hires we made with Sunny and Cam, they're both young. And actually, I think there was this sort of rhetoric around that young people don't want to come to the office. And actually, when we were speaking to both of them, we're like, I want to be in. And our ethos was always that the best way to learn is to actually from being around other people. I just don't think you get as much, you don't soak up as much from everybody else. Like, I remember when the three of us started, you learn from listening to other people or being able to, I'm going to do something, do you want to come over and have a look at it, and actually have some structure. And to be honest, both of them have been super keen to come in, and it's, I think having the office has been a benefit so far.
Is that when the clients come in, or you kind of see them out and about? Was that
a real mix, to be honest?
Yeah.
Still. I mean, ideally, new clients, we like to meet in person when we can at the start, and then kind of catch-ups throughout the year tend to be online. Annual planning meetings, again, for me, I'd probably say a lot are still online, but we always offer either going to people's houses. Those clients I was talking about in Bristol, I'm going to see them next month. Again, if they want online, if they want in person, just flexible around it. We don't kind of mandate it. It's always nice to meet in person. I feel like we've got a good space now. As meeting rooms we can book, it's ideal.
And I guess all of this, I mean, one of the big kind of challenges for financial advisors is this kind of like the dichotomy between running businesses, being, you know, directors and managers and all the rest of it, versus, you know, the day job of giving financial advice. And I guess you're all advisors, you're doing both kind of hats. Like, how do you find the split? You know, do some of you take on more of the like kind of the day-to-day management bad business side of things, or like how do you find the kind of balance?
Yeah, we do generally split stuff up. I think when we started, it was quite clear there was like natural people were drawn towards different things.
Yeah.
I'll be honest and put my hand up and say the actual business planning, the actual, I don't really, like, not drawn to it naturally, struggle with it quite a bit, whereas these guys are much more kind of tuned into it. And no, probably because I haven't done it, you've had to. So yeah, like that I think if I'm just left to my own devices, I'll just do client work and nothing else. But again, that's, I know that's a, that can't be the case. And we've all got to be putting into the pot.
I think our roles will evolve as well as we grow the team. It's when it's the three of you, it's sort of everyone's involved at every stage and planning it out, etc. And one of the reasons we brought in Anna as head of ops was to be like, well, actually, the business is growing. We're still probably the best three people to continue to advise to grow the business, but we want to build a team and train people, and having someone who has experience in building a team is super valuable because none of us have ever done it. We know how we want the business to look and we can communicate that vision, but thinking about, well, how do we do one-to-ones and what's the training structure and how do you get them signed off and all of these things, and actually having Anna come in has been able to free up our time to focus more on the business planning element and then still continue to do the client work.
And do a far better job than I think we would
any
have
of us,
done.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
It's when we sat down at the start of the year when we were talking about the hiring kind of journey we'd be on, and it became very obvious very quickly we were going to need to hire sooner.
Yeah.
So Anna's just kind of sat there and gone, well, I need to get all of this ready, the interview process ready. So she worked her backside off to get that ready. Then it was the onboarding process, making sure that they would learn step by step, and they had a really good way of checking in with her, learning from us. And so she was really on it from a very, very early door.
Yeah. And how have you found it so far? I mean, obviously they're very fresh. They're new into kind of the role. Like, how have you found having two
it's good
aspiring advisors in the business?
It's good. It's we were talking about this the other day. Like, it's interesting to be on the flip side of thinking about myself and Rob as employees versus now actually being a business owner employing someone and thinking to yourself, God, I must have been a real pain.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, you're worse. it's good. It's what we always wanted to. We always wanted to bring people in and train them up and give some opportunities as well. I mean, we had a great sort of training to go through to get set up, and we wanted to sort of...
At your previous firm?
Yeah, yeah. And we always wanted to build out a team and pay it forward. And it's nice now to be able to see that actually happening.
And, you know, where do you want to go to? Because obviously you've got two kind of young advisors. I mean, like, you're obviously kind of running like a lifestyle business here, but where do you want to get to in terms of size and team members and things?
That's the question.
That's the question, yeah. So we're currently going through a process of... Me, Rob, and Rob, when we first set up, we had this sort of idea, but it is an idea, right? You have no proof of concept that what you're thinking and you want to do is actually going to work. Now we have some proof of concept over the last 3 years that actually, okay, we do have people who want to work with us and we are building out a team. We're now refining that sort of like 10-year plan and then working backwards 1, 3, 5. We'd like to get to the point, I think the goal at the moment is to work with like 5,000 people.
5,000?
Yeah.
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 I mean, that's a considerable scale up.
Yeah. Over 10 years.
Yeah.
10 years.
Well, yeah. I think it kind of leads into that point around AI and how that was going to potentially support
and
some
of
that
And our service
growth.
Offering changes and stuff, sort of things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that. I mean, obviously, AI at the moment, and how are you using it? Have you got an AI provider, or what's going on?
Yeah, we work with Saturn.
Yeah.
Mostly now. I mean, again, a lot of people will be doing the same
thing. A lot of financial planners with PT are using
them. We use them as well. So now it's a case of we've used it since the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's now basically how do we refine that into basically an advice process from start to finish, which has made massive strides in the last 6 months, which again is just speed and efficiency. And
so what's it doing for call transcriptions?
Call transcriptions, follow-ups, building cases. It can now write suitability letters, needs a bit of refining.
Are you using it for that, or is that?
Yeah, it needs a bit of refining, and it needs branding as well and things like that, better branding and how it's pulling through. But it's definitely getting there. Research ability to basically see where data's missing, and with templates that we're able to create, we're right in the mix of that now, trying to get that right. And then long term, we want it to be able to produce, we'll do all the research obviously, but be able to produce the presentations and the plans, and then we just speed up the delivery of it. Because most of the time, the plan is the cash flow, and the plan is, all right, well, the actionable steps, the bit that takes the time, that's done by the research. The bit that takes the time is putting it into a presentation page by page to give you a nice client experience on how to do it. If that can be done quickly, we can speed up the process, deliver better outcomes to the client.
Consistency
as well across the board.
But what about an ongoing service? Because obviously, you know, many financial advisors will say you get to a certain, like, client size, and you can't service more than like 100, 120 clients just because of the practicalities of it, yeah. and like getting to know all these different people.
I think we're all in agreement. I think you still, there's a lot of, it's not so much like the admin. I think the admin will reduce. I just think people, again, have a capacity for the amount of relationships they can actually properly hold down.
Well, it's like friends, isn't it, as well?
You know? Yeah. So I think we'll, again, to the point we mentioned earlier around having specialists, I think we'll end up having, me and Rob have spoken about this before at PFS, on the thing is, a lot of financial planning firms are very like pyramid heavy, small number of advisors, big support team, big admin team. You might end up seeing that flip where you have a lot of advisors, more specialist technical experts, and then less admin because the administration is basically a tech run system that gives the output, and then you have to be able to check the output that comes from the tech and make sure it's actually working.
And then let's talk about, I guess, the other kind of business decisions you made when you started, because I think when I spoke to you 3 years ago, you were, you know, obviously picking everything. And I think I've got down, you were Fundament as your platform provider, yeah. Timeline as the MPS provider. Is that still the case?
No. Fundament still. Fundament have been brilliant. I think probably one of the best decisions we've made.
Agreed.
And Dimensional. We're fully Dimensional.
Okay. So you switched to Dimensional.
Yeah.
After about a year, maybe?
Yeah, about a year.
What was behind that decision?
Rob?
I think it was just aligned a bit better with us.
Yeah.
From what we wanted from an MPS and the actual investment proposition, it just aligned slightly better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're launching their own MPS as well, aren't they? Is that something you're looking at? Was that
Dimensional?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we use.
That's what we use, yeah.
So okay.
It's very similar to what Timeline use.
Yeah.
And they got very similar terms on Fundament, and we've got a really good relationship with Dimensional. So it lines up with what we need from an MPS, what we want from an MPS, how we want to invest our clients' money, how we invest our own money.
Yeah.
And so the synergies were just slightly stronger with Dimensional versus Timeline. Still have quite a lot with Timeline.
Yeah.
And they've got some really important parts for our proposition. But the kind of core investment approach is more sat with Dimensional.
Okay, great. And obviously, I guess in that time, we've seen kind of like quite a lot of market activity. I mean, you know, we've had, well, tariffs and... I guess markets have bumped quite a lot this year as well in the end now.
Yeah.
But I mean, how have you found that kind of like what clients are saying about volatility and everything else?
I think, to be honest, they're not. they're enjoying the last 2 years as we all are. It makes life much easier, right?
But annual planning meetings.
Annual planning is great. Yeah, it's easier that way. But they're
23 when it was a bad year, wasn't it? Or 22?
22, yeah.
And interest rates.
Yeah, and the actual, what we're spending a lot of time doing at the moment is basically saying to clients, this isn't normal.
Yeah.
These level of returns.
This isn't normal. Yeah, like if we go back at some point, X is going to happen and we go back to the plan, the plan is still okay if X happens.
We're planning for 5, 6, 7% on average, not 17, 18, 20% every year.
Yeah, with a big decline somewhere in our working together at some point.
I think a lot of it, I mean, you go through the tariffs, things like that. You have these little blips with these clients.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you kind of go through a few of them. I remember some of our old clients at the old firm, you know, you go through a COVID with them. You kind of go through and you make sure people stay on track and their plan doesn't fall off the rails, and actually it's a fairly swift recovery most of the time. The clients for life. Like when these things happen again, you just remind them of what it was like at the time and we're still here, it's all fine. So a lot of the new clients we've taken on, we haven't necessarily had that with them yet.
Not yet.
So it's just prepping them and saying, this isn't normal. It's been a great year or two.
Like, it's going to be a downturn at some point.
Expect
it. And also, I think, as well, one of the things we haven't experienced as a younger advisors, and probably any younger advisors, is, as Rob rightly said, like the recoveries are quick, have been quick.
Yeah, 6, 12 months.
When you get, potentially history will tell you, when you get a recovery that's 24 months, there might be more difficult conversations to have.
Yeah.
Therefore, the actual education on the way in is so much more important, and obviously continued education as well.
Yeah. And then coming back to AI as well a little bit, you know, obviously it is changing how businesses are run, but how is it changing kind of client dynamics? You know, how are you getting clients kind of saying, you know, looking at your financial plans, putting it through Gemini or whatever? I mean, like, what is it changing conversations already with you guys?
No, I haven't had any direct. Have you?
Questions.
Yeah, questions. Yeah.
There's some
questions,
very specific and pointed questions you get where someone's gone in, they've clearly put your information in.
Yeah.
And asked it what they should be asking, and they come back with it. And it can be, some of them can have slightly, if it's a short conversation you've had with them to start with, it can be a slightly different dynamic when it comes back at you. So misunderstandings.
Yeah.
But
yeah, because obviously it lacks context, right? The when you're asking them, you should ask this question, it lacks context to their situation. So what the book says and what Claude or ChatGPT says you should do doesn't necessarily relevant to your specific situation, which can be the issue.
I have to say, you also get people who have done the calculations themselves and it's completely wrong.
So what are cash flow stuff or
more like technical, the technical and the tax planning side of it. And they've asked a quick question which lacks context and it's given completely the wrong answer. So when you're actually talking through what's going to happen, it's not always pleasant.
Like really basic stuff, right? It's like uses out of date allowances or
like carry forward calculations. Yeah, I've had a few where clients have done it, they've acted on it, and then they've gone, we've got a whacking tax bill. And you kind of go, you put in the wrong data to the AI tool and then you'd acted on it and you haven't had advice.
Not including RSUs when they're working at how much money they can pay into their pension. Income's double what it actually was and they're hugely tapered, but AI doesn't understand it. It doesn't think further afield. So they get caught out. Yeah.
I've had a couple of clients that haven't become ongoing clients. They just wanted to, we call it design and build, which is that initial sort of audit, cash flow modeling, planning, just get them on the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
Who said, we think we're okay. We've run this through an AI tool or we've built it ourselves. We'd just like a sense check and to just see if there are any aspects that we're missing. So I think people still like that aspect of it to go, I've done my calculations. Can you just almost sign off on it and go, yeah, that is legit and you haven't missed anything?
Because the chatbots aren't going to be able to do that. They're not going to give you a...
They tell you you're great all the time.
Yeah,
lots of positive reinforcements. Great. And then I guess, and I asked about the kind of the hardest or the worst decision or you made. I want to ask what the best decision you made was. What's the thing that's kind of really had the most positive impact?
Doing it.
There is. Do you know what? I haven't answered this before. I answered in the same way I said before, which is doing it with two other people. Mm. Like it's bad enough doing it with two other people, let alone having to do it by yourself. It's just not having being able to have sounding boards and talking things through and being able to sit in the mud with two other people and talk stuff through. I admire anybody that goes out and does it by themselves.
Certainly fortunate in that regard that I'm doing it as a trio.
Yeah.
It's
much more fun.
Although we don't celebrate as enough as we should. We talk about it all the time. We hit certain milestones. We're like, we'll go out and celebrate that. And it's like, all right.
Watch it go past. Oh, yeah. I missed that one too.
So there's probably a learning there that we need to celebrate a bit more.
Yeah. And what was that? Is that the biggest message? Because then you're like a financial planner. You might be similar situations you were 3 years ago, kind of thinking about moving out of their firm or their network or whatever and going alone. What was like the big kind of message you give them or big bit of advice? Team up with others, then not do it alone.
I think that's good advice. Yeah, if you're lucky enough to find and believe in the people that you're doing it with.
Yeah.
I think importantly on that, your values have got to align.
Yeah.
Because that, if I imagine it would have been very different if the three of us had started this business and our values were pulling in different directions. Like trying to navigate that as well as running the business would have been really difficult. Luckily, I mean, we did this exercise when Anna joined to revisit the vision and the mission and where we're heading. And we haven't done that since we started this 3 years ago. And luckily it was exactly the same as when we started. So nothing has changed.
If not closer.
Yeah, it's kind of pulled us together a bit more. So finding the right people is always good. And I think as well, I mean, cash flow yourself. Like, we do it every day with clients. Don't, almost expect the worst when it comes to like paying yourself and how long it's going to take and overestimate how long it's going to be before you're...
Delayed gratification.
Yeah, be sensible and do that. That we would tell all of our clients to do is an important one. I'd say those are the...
I would also say patience as well. Patience in making the decision to leave as well. We speak to a lot of younger advisors really keen to leave and set up and do their own thing, but they've been advising a couple of years. I think he's just needed.
Whereas you were kind of 5-6 years into it, were you?
Yeah, six plus, and very obviously very.
We've all gone through a decade in the profession.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like I think it's just taken time to think about it. Like again, I think a lot of the profession glamorizes being your own business owner. We talk about the aspirational stuff a lot with clients. Force over your time. I probably work more than we did before when we were employed.
Get paid less.
it sounds super glamorous bringing your own business and choose your time, but when it's just you that it's reliant on, and obviously the three of us, then you look at things differently. But things take longer than you think they're going to do as well.
How much kind of funding do you need to begin with? Like you obviously must have come into it with a bit of cash in the bank.
You've got to have at least a year's worth of...
Yeah, we all had slightly different circumstances, didn't we?
But yeah.
my wife decided she wanted to start her own business at the same time, which...
Don't do that. That's a piece of advice.
Yeah, so my cash flow was terrible. We had to sell our house, right? We just lived off cash for a year or so. So that wasn't great. But yeah, if you've got a spouse that's earning, great. Then that kind of helps and it puts a bit less pressure on. But yeah, I think, you know, do what you would do to your clients when you're planning these things out and err on the side of caution and stress test it, look for the blind spots. And like Scott said, just expect it to take a bit longer, maybe. Be patient.
But also be kind of positive about it.
Yes, yeah.
There's got to be something aspirational. If you weren't aspirational in what you want to do, you wouldn't have started it in the first place. So it's
the kind of... What do you mean in terms of your business purpose or in terms of like your personal circumstances?
Everything. Because I find it very difficult to separate personal and business because for me, it's all one and the same.
Yeah.
So my success is the business success and personal success is like it kind of all comes together. So you almost live, sleep, breathe it. Mm. And but you've kind of got to have that vision of where you want to get to, what you want it to look like.
Yeah. And just, I think, final point, obviously, you are within a network framework, which I guess is potentially the more prevalent model of people going it alone. We're seeing, I think, more people going into networks than DA these days. How have you found that? You've the Sense Network? Has that been a good home for your business?
Been good.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Give you a really good framework to work from.
Yeah.
Sets the business up as long as you do everything you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Keep your files up to date. Make sure giving the right advice. They leave you alone. They're not too onerous. They don't kind of force you to do anything. It's you present us with what you want to have as your advice proposition. And then from there, if as long as that meets their criteria, they're happy to let you crack on.
Mm. I've heard some horror stories lately though of networks.
Yeah.
Absolute horror shows of people wanting to get going and
taking time and
time to get cases stuff, pre-approved, sign off, like putting advice in front of clients, like a few months later, still not kind of got the advice delivered because they needed to check it all and whatnot. And you just maybe these networks have kind of grown a bit too big, too quick and not been able to support all the people that have joined. In a sense, like Rob said, you know, the framework's there. They obviously do it for a lot of businesses, but it doesn't feel as if they've grown too quickly like some of these others.
So you just want a network to be pragmatic
rather
than sort of book says no.
Yeah.
It's just like at the end of the day, we're all trying to give the best outcome to a client. And then we shouldn't forget that that's who we're looking after, not.
I've got to say one thing, kind of is credit to us. I think we knew what we were doing when we joined. So we came from a good compliance background. We knew how to build a proper case, how to give proper advice, how to document it. So from their perspective, we were quite easy for them. So it's...
Yeah. Well, some firms are harder to deal with than others, right? The networks.
And I think we're probably more detail orientated than a lot of firms, more forward thinking than a lot of firms in comparison, because they've got quite a range. So for us, it's worked, and hopefully for them, it's worked.
Yeah. And do they do kind of compliance and things for you guys? Yeah. Or is that?
Yeah. They act as our compliance function. Yeah. So training, compliance, keeping up our CPD, check-ins, one-to-ones. They do all the case checks. So...
Okay, guys, well, look, you know, I spoke to you 3 years ago. We did this interview. 3 years on, you know, we're talking about where the business is at. You know, where do you want to be in 3 years' time?
I think it's more of the same. I think it's really exciting to see where AI can take this profession as a business, how we can operate in that new kind of world that's unfolding. But I think our principles and values and everything will remain unchanged. And I think it's more of the same. You know, keep growing a brilliant team, keep delivering the great advice that we do, keep building on the kind of sources of clients that are working really well. I don't know, anything else to add to that?
Well, it'd be good to sit here and talk about how the team have kind of progressed and they're now training people who've come in and replaced their role.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be
more clients kind of working with us, and I guess how we're able to help our clients, our proposition developing and kind of actually probably spreading out a little bit more. So kind of getting a bit more lower ends, being able to support them as well as the kind of the higher, more traditional client types.
I'd like us to have be helping more people, whether that be building more of a presence that we're able to offer more stuff for free value, and then also then taking on obviously more clients anyway. But I think having a bit more of a greater reach would be helpful.
Journey to 5,000.
That's a big jump, you know.
It is a big jump. We're young.
We've got a lot of time.
We're in this.
You know, lots of planners
forever.
To speak to, they're like, you know, happy with my numbers.
We're in this forever.
I think we have been pleasantly surprised with how things have been going. Yeah. It's always a good litmus test, isn't it, when you look back and if you 3 years ago would have, you know, looked at us now and said, would we have been happy with the progress we've made with, you know, all the metrics people talk about with the number of referrals and the number of clients we look after and the team and everything? Like, yeah, we'd have snapped your hand off. So
yeah,
it's always good to kind of look back on that stuff and think, is it, you know, and every month when we track these numbers and we have this kind of dashboard that tracks it with all of these, every month we seem to be ahead of where we were when we kind of forecast, not too far ahead, but kind of projected quite well.
2 years in, we were behind. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, it just ticked up. Yeah. And kind of now just slightly ahead.
What's that slow burn you were talking about, Scott?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, patience. Patience.
Well, guys, on that note, thanks so much for joining me. Rob, Scott, great to have you in.
But today is VE Day. The boys
the newly crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing
landed.
Down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth: cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.